A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 138. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Frankenstein. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, Frankenstein. This is a 2007 updating or adaptation of the Frankenstein story, which appeared on the ITV channel. And it was written and directed by Dr. Jed Mercurio, who we talked about when we covered the show Invasion Earth. And here he is again in genre television and producing this sort of strange interpretation of the Frankenstein story, I think, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And it is known, of course, for having a female Dr. Frankenstein, Dr. Victoria Frankenstein, rather than Victor Frankenstein. And it mixed elements from the original novel with some elements taken from other film versions from adaptations over the years. And also has some original elements in it and added some modern fears about advances in medical science and this type of thing.
Okay, so that's our story here. And as we discussed last time, we had Victoria Frankenstein working with her team on this universal xenograft transplant project. And then rather strangely, going from a stage of having cells and tissues in cultures, and inevitably there's a creature, there's a monster created, although in this interpretation it's very much an accidental creation, certainly on the part of Victoria. She doesn't intend to produce a creature. And it's not entirely clear how it moves quite so quickly from just a tissue culture in a tank to being a huge creature. But there it is. There is a creature and it escapes and havoc ensues, I think, would be the way you're putting it, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. The idea of it being accidental is definitely very different from the original novel and from most adaptations that I'm aware of.
Okay, we're calling it the creature, but in the television show itself, it's referred to as the UX, which stands for Universal Xenograft, which is the name of the medical project that Victoria Frankenstein is working on.
Yes, it was all about growing organs for transplant. And the UX, the creature itself, kills a small child, and something that is sort of similar to the classic 1931 Universal Studios film. And that is sort of what begins the idea of the UX being a threat and something that is wreaking havoc and something that kills.
Yes, and it's I mean, it's quite dark and unpleasant that moment in this particular story, because we have got this strange creature on the loose and strange things happen, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. And the creature becomes the subject of further investigation by the Clerval Institute, this sort of mysterious organization that appears to have some sort of darker agenda. We don't entirely understand what's going on with the Clerval Institute. Meanwhile, the police investigate events at the laboratory and these murders that are apparently going on.
That's right. And there's a slight sort of change from the dark gothic look in the first half of this TV film to a more sort of modern scientific, more clinical setting at the Clerval Institute in the second half, I think, Brian. So there's a bit of a shift when the creature is captured and then subject to further tests and investigations.
Yeah, it starts to get more elements of like a forensic show or a scientific investigation show.
Okay, so we've been talking about some of the similarities and differences between various versions of the Frankenstein story as we've gone along, and let's concentrate on a few of them here in this television show. We've obviously got the names, which we talked about in the last episode. We've got Victoria Frankenstein, although, as we say, that word, the F word, is never mentioned. It is seen on the end credits, and I think it's half glimpsed on a burnt folder when the police are investigating a fire at the laboratory, which is supposed to have sort of destroyed the evidence. But I think we glimpse half the name. So we've got that name. We've also got her ex-husband and director of this institute, Henry Clerval. We've got their son, who's William, and William was the name of Frankenstein's young brother in the novel. And then we've also got other names like Pretorius, which was a character in the second Universal movie, The Bride of Frankenstein. So there's lots of name nods in the characters here, Ryan. And then Waldman is one of Frankenstein's tutors in the novel, and here turns up as a sort of colleague at work, played by Neil Pearson.
And of course you have Ed Gore as the assistant, which is a pretty clear play on Igor from the, was it the Universal films?
I think so, yes. I think that's from the Universal movies as well, isn't it? As you say, another clear nod in the names. It's quite humorous, that one, a little in-joke for us.
Yes, of course, there was no assistant as such in the novel. It had a rather different structure to it. We get the lightning and the sort of gothic look of the basement laboratory, which fits in very well with the films and the novels. We have the tank with things growing in it, which is reminiscent of Kenneth Branagh's film, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which was from 1993. We have bolts on the neck and sort of a restraining skull cap, which don't go all the way, but they definitely reference Jack Pierce's legendary makeup for Boris Karloff in the 1931 film.
Yes, that's right. I mean, the UX creature is captured by the Clerval Institute, and that's where they insert these bolts, and they give an explanation for why they're there as a form of control of the creature. But it's obviously, it's a very knowing nod back to the various versions of Frankenstein over the years, and perhaps the most famous ones. On top of that, we have the research facility, which is called the Windmill Institute, and that apparently is a nod to the final scenes of the Universal movie, which of course is set in a windmill. But we have we've also got the creature as a sort of simple force of nature. This is a very sort of not a very sort of intelligent creature, and it has the same fear of fire from the movies, and it's not at all the sort of reasoning, thinking character that appeared in the original novel.
Yes, I think that take on the creature or the monster is much more coming from the Universal films and that sort of thing. The creature was very intelligent and very much a thinking creature in the original novel. Now, there are some definite differences between this take on Frankenstein and the earlier ones.
That's right. As we've mentioned, this is an accidental creature, so Frankenstein does not set out with the intention of creating life. This is something that arises unintentionally. And in fact, Victoria tries to shut the project down at one point, but sort of the forces above her, who are acting rather sort of mysteriously, do not actually terminate the cell line, so the creature is created.
That's right. And rather than being sort of repelled by the creation and horrified by it, Victoria seeks to bond with it and to understand it. So there's more of a connection of a different sort that they develop in this. And once the UX is actually captured, the plot diverges quite a bit and goes somewhere else. It also, I think, definitely introduces some more modern elements to it, with the ideas of fear of terrorism and the ideas of state torture and mind control and these sorts of things. Definitely have much more of a current feel to them rather than the feel of these older versions from many years ago.
Yes, I guess any horror sort of adaptation or any horror story may reflect some of the current fears that are around at the time. So we've got Mary Shelley's original novel with its sort of worries about anatomical dissections and body snatching and experiments with galvanism and so on. And then we've got this 2007 version, and it's got stuff about, as you say, mind control and state sort of sponsored torture. And there's some rather strange things done with the UX creature and these bolts in its neck to control it. So it's all there, I suppose, Brian.
Yes, of course, the attitudes and fears of the time in that period of 180 plus years between the novel and this particular production, things changed quite a bit.
Absolutely, yes. And as you said, strangely, Victoria is sort of interested and intrigued by the creature and seeks to understand it. And of course, there is this link because she started the cell line with a blood sample from her own son, William. So she does see a link with her son and tries to communicate with the UX.
Yes, I guess something that it shares with the original novel is that there is this very strong connection between creator and creature. The nature of that connection was quite different. It becomes a more personal connection of trying to understand this creature rather than the more sort of horrific and fear-based connection that they had and sort of failing attempts to understand that they had in the original novel.
Yes, that's right. Victor Frankenstein is repelled by his creation, isn't he? Absolutely.
Very much so. But the creature itself wants to connect with his creator and have that connection and understanding that is not there.
Yeah. And that's a very interesting element in the original novel, and one that doesn't seem to be touched upon in very many adaptations we've had over the 180 odd years, as you say, Brian.
Yes, we don't see the thinking creature portrayed in adaptations very much. I think Kenneth Branagh's version, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, probably did the most with that of things I've seen, anyhow.
Other differences to talk about just briefly is the DVD version. We've been watching a Region 2 DVD, which has a 90-minute director's cut version. The original broadcast was 75 minutes. You can watch the original broadcast version on the DVD as well. And it's actually, I think, difficult to see much in the way of differences, apart from, I thought, more abrupt editing in the 75-minute version. I wasn't aware that I was seeing additional scenes or sequences, Brian.
So it may be that they initially thought they had a slot long enough to run this 90-minute version and then realized they needed to lose those 15 minutes, so cut little bits where they had to.
That's my guess. I think they, you know, I think Jed Mercurio thought he had a 90-minute slot, and then they had to edit it down to fit into 75 minutes. And so the result is some quite brutal editing, I think, when you look at the two versions. And certainly the 90-minute version does seem to run more smoothly. And if you watch the 90-minute version, I'll just mention very quickly that you get a blink and you miss it early appearance by the actress Anna Torv, who's since gone on to be much more famous in the American TV show Fringe.
Oh, yes.
So she's there very briefly as a nurse in the hospital. So anyway, we've been watching the 90-minute version, which slightly smoother editing. But if you're, you know, if you know any more details as to the difference between the versions, or perhaps why it was indeed cut down to 75 minutes, do let us know.
Yes, absolutely.
Don't call it that.
There is nowhere to go.
I won't let them take him. It's
So we should talk a little bit about some of our own thoughts about what we thought about this production of Frankenstein. So, Eamon, what did you like about this one?
Well, I thought it started out with a good idea. I did like the idea of updating Frankenstein, and I liked the idea of placing it in this medical research facility, which perhaps is slightly underfunded. It's in a dark basement. So I thought the sort of initial concept quite good. And I don't know what you felt about how that then developed with the writing and so on, Brian.
Well, it was a bit of a mixed bag. It was not bad. I do like the premise, as you say, is pretty good. I think the way they set up the atmosphere of it was very good. Having the sort of dark imagery of the volcanic ash in the sky and this old, somewhat run-down building where they have this fairly modern advanced medical lab sort of crammed into this older space. I think the sense of atmosphere that some of those things built up was quite nice.
Yes, and the look of it is quite good. As you say, the outside with the dark skies and that ash on the cars, and then that creepy basement and those flickering corridors. So the look of it's quite good. It does seem to change halfway through this production, and when it becomes much more bright and clinical, and the creature is captured and subjected to various experiments, it does seem to it's almost like a completely separate second half, I thought.
Yes, it is a little bit of an odd shift, that's true. The character of Victoria, or Victoria Frankenstein, I quite liked. I thought it was sort of set up and written and put in an interesting place, and I thought the actress brought that off pretty well.
Yes, I think she's good. Certainly she starts out very well, and towards the end of the program she's one of the better features in the second half when she tries to bond with the creature. I must admit she confused me slightly in the middle part of the show as to whether she actually wanted this sort of experiment to continue or whether she wanted to shut it down. There's some slight changes there which didn't make an awful lot of sense to me. But once the creature is created, very interesting character.
Yes, good character. I thought some of the story elements they gave her were a little bit odd. The idea of having the creature created accidentally, it's an interesting idea, but I don't think it works quite as well with all these things they're trying to do.
Yes, it is a bit puzzling. At one point they're discussing finding human teeth in the tissue culture, and then very shortly afterwards we've got thunder and lightning and a fully formed creature. So it's a bit of a jump, isn't it?
Yes, it is. One thing that I did like that I think dates back to the original novel is this really had the feel of being science fiction as well as being horror. You know, it had the idea of a doctor meddling in science and doing things that are very powerful that really should not be done. And it really has a lot of fundamental science fiction aspects to it, and ideas of taking the science too far and doing things that that you shouldn't, and doing the sort of hubris type ideas of yes, we can do this, but should we do it? Those kinds of things are often missing from adaptations of Frankenstein, although it's really there in the novel and it's really there in this version, and I thought that was nice.
Yes, it is good. As you say, it reflects some of the fears of the times and the concerns about what medical science can and what medical science should do. That's a nice little science fiction sort of theme for us in this production. And I suppose while we're mentioning the medical science, I should update listeners on my regular Doctor Watch with Jed Mercurio. As you would expect, the medicine here is reasonably accurate, and certainly in the early scenes of the research and the stuff in the hospital with Victoria's son being unwell, that's all very well portrayed. I thought the medical science there is very good.
Okay, sounds good. I like the idea of using the sort of genetic engineering ideas and the ideas of growing organs for people as the way that this works and the method that is used for moving into the creation of this creature.
Yeah, it's a clever little way of doing it, I guess. Yes, as you say, it seems like a very reasonable project, which has unforeseen consequences, particularly for Victoria.
Okay, so from my point of view, those are some of the things that were kind of interesting with this one. What did you not like as much, Eamon?
I didn't like it so much once we got to the second half of the production. I think we've probably sort of discussed that as we've gone along. It does seem to lose its way after that first half of dark and gothic and spooky. Once it turns to clean and clinical, it becomes, I thought, a little bit more confused, actually.
Yeah, it had a little bit more of the feeling of they had all of these ideas that they wanted to add into it. Well, let's fit them all in somehow.
Yes, that's right. There were quite a few things that they wanted to get in, and it seems a bit of a rush in a way in the second half with them trying to cram in all this stuff about mind control and the way that the state would handle prisoners and so on. So there may be one or two problems in the second half. What about yourself, Brian? What else did you have problems with?
I thought in many ways the whole thing felt a little bit generic, a little bit like a paint-by-the-numbers attempt to put together a TV horror show with Frankenstein. These are the things you need. These are the things we want to put in. Let's put together a sort of very basic standard kind of plot and basic, all the kinds of things you would expect. And it ends up giving you a show that's kind of generic.
Okay. And at times, some of the sort of science speak and dialogue seems like that. It seems a little generic. It seems a little obvious. It's the same sort of scientists arguing with each other that we've seen in other productions and that you'd perhaps expect for, as you say, if you were going to try and produce a horror show like this.
Yeah, and sometimes that can work very well, but it needs to have something that brings it up a level from just sort of generic bits you would expect and nothing else. And this was sort of lacking in the extra thing to make it more interesting somehow.
Okay. One of the things that does make it interesting, I suppose, is the creature makeup, which we should mention. And I would point out, yes, Gordon, I think, on our Facebook group reminded us that the makeup was very good and the CGI seems to work quite well. And I think Julian Bleach does quite well underneath all that stuff, Brian.
Yes, I think he is good at doing that type of work.
And we've got, lots of impressive actors here, and perhaps maybe almost too many, because it seemed to me there'd be too many bad guys in this show. And, you know, the motivations of some of the various doctors and professors were a little bit confusing as we went along. So maybe one too many.
It does make it a touch messy at times, doesn't it?
Yeah. Anything else you'd point out about this show?
I don't think so. It is not a particularly memorable show, in my opinion, actually. It definitely had some good things and some weaker points, but not an especially memorable kind of show.
Okay. I will mention the DVD release once again, just to point out that it's a very plain DVD release, just this extra sort of 15-minute version, but nothing else on it. And I'll make a plea. Could we perhaps have some more in the way of DVD extras? You know, an interview with Jed Mercurio or a making of documentary would seem to be the basics, but we don't get that here. I'm thinking of some recent BBC shows we've watched, for instance, the Mark Gatiss First Men on the Moon, where at least we get quite an interesting making of documentary as well. So for me, the DVD release falls down on that basis.
Yes, although it is nice that they gave us that extended version on the DVD.
Yes, I guess so. It is nice to see that. Presumably the version that Jed Mercurio intended us to see.
Right. Now, I think this leads us into our recommendations. So, Eamon, what do you think?
Okay, well, I find this one a tricky one. I think our listeners will probably have guessed as we've gone along that we've had a few problems with this particular adaptation or interpretation of Frankenstein. I would point out that the first half is very good, and the second half, I have problems with. I'd point out that it's fairly cheap. It's just £7. So I'm going to give this one a cautious recommendation. If you're interested in the Frankenstein story and all the mythology, if you've seen all the various versions and interpretations, you'll probably want to check this one out, and you may have missed it on its original ITV showing. So it's a cautious yes from me, but now we'll find out what Brian thinks.
Well, like I alluded to, it's a little bit of a disposable or forgettable production to me. There wasn't anything that I thought was horribly bad in it. There wasn't anything that was remarkably good, although it was, all in all, a decent production. It's okay. If you're looking for a rental, something to take a quick look at, or if you happen to be particularly interested in seeing a newer Frankenstein production, then sure, take a look. But all in all, I would say this one is one that you can really skip and move on to something else.
You're thinking it perhaps lacked that vital spark then, Brian?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, so
lightning did not strike with this one.
Lightning didn't strike you. So it's a maybe yes, maybe no from us here on British Invaders. But as ever, we'd love to hear what you think. If you've seen this version, or if you decide to pick it up on rental or to buy the DVD afterwards, do let us know your own sort of take on this show.
Absolutely. So, in summary, scientist Victoria Frankenstein is working on genetic tools for growing organs for transplant, and somehow accidentally manages to grow this creature that goes on to kill and to become this threatening force of nature and is eventually captured. You have ideas of Victoria Frankenstein trying to communicate with it. You have all of these sort of modern ideas of mind control and different things being blended in with this classic idea from the 19th century of Frankenstein creating a monster.
Okay, very good. A show with mixed reviews from us here on British Invaders. But do join us next time when we're going back to the world of Gerry Anderson and his Super Marionation series. And in particular, we're going to be looking at Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons, an epic series from 1967 and one that you really don't want to skip.
It should be fun to talk about that one. It's definitely something that is well remembered by many.
Absolutely, and I'm very excited about us talking about it.
So you can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. We are on the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to thegeekculturenetwork.com, you can find us there as well.
And now you can also find us on Voice of Geeks, which is streaming radio on the internet, which you'll find at vognetwork.com. And as ever, we welcome all our listeners on the Vog Network. Glad to have you along and hope you'll join us next time.
Yes, absolutely. We stream on the Vog Network on Mondays and Tuesdays. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. And until next time, this is Eamon in England saying, it's alive.